This is Infidel One. Offending Coyote Down. Offending Coyote Down.
Roger that.
Welcome to Trappin' Radio. We're proud, organic, free-range, wild fur farmers of North America.
Let me tell you a little story about how I was raised. Every day work, every day pray. God, family, friends, yeah, everybody sins. A winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. Help folks in need, don't fall for greed. A jealous man is weak, so think before you speak. If you love them, let them know. If you hate, let it go. Fast can be fun, but sometimes you need slow. God is all good, the devil is so real. So listen up, y'all, cause this is how I feel.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got none. Except for the good Lord up above. I answer to no one.
Now let's cover our sponsors. They do a lot to help support Trappin' Radio. So I'm asking you guys out there and gals to help support our sponsors as they keep Trappin' Radio on the air. First sponsors, Oki Cable and Trap Supply. Jeb's the owner of this. He's out of Oklahoma. Super guy. You'll not meet anybody nicer. It's somebody you're going to want to deal with. You can reach him at oktrapsupply.com. You can give Jeb a call at 918-429-4648. Not only does he do trap supply guys, he's a fur buyer, so if you're around the Oklahoma or surrounding states, give him a call with your fur. When you need stuff, give him a call and he'll get it out to you as soon as he can. Our second sponsor is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. Everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Guys, if you're into trapping fur, hunting fur, chasing fur with dogs, you're not going to be able to think of hardly anything that you can't get from F&T. You can reach them at fntpost.com. You can also give them a call at 989-727-8727. Whatever you want, F&T's got it. Wildlife Control Supplies, proven solutions for wildlife control, delivering value, expertise, and products to the wildlife individual. If you're in the ADC business, control business, even fur trapping, you need to look at these guys' website. Top-notch company, have everything you would want, even the odd stuff that ADC guys are looking for. You can reach them at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. You can give them a call at 877-684-7262. International number is 860-844-0101. If you're a wildlife control professional, you need to have Wildlife Control Supplies as one of your favorites on your computer or your phone, because when you come across something that you need specialized equipment, Alan will get it right out to you. Now let's go trapping.
See, I'm a flag flying, Bible toting son of a gun. Yeah, I'm hell on the heart, just a rebel on the run. Scared, don't know it, fear, don't feel it. The truth is the light, sometimes you gotta fight. Good beats bad, right beats wrong. I'm a barroom preacher and this is my song. I'm climbing for the top, representing for the country. I'm the people's champ, right out to dead camp. Shotgun toter, Republican voter. Hank Jr. supporter, let's protect our border. To hell with anyone who don't believe in the USA. Cause this is what I say.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got...
Welcome to Trapping Across America. This is your host, Clint Locklear, which is an organic, free-range, wild fur farmer, feral libertarian, peaceful seditionist, permaculturist with a hippie slant host. So you'll know exactly what you're getting into if you're new. And if you've been here a while, you'll definitely know it's just the way that it is. So we're gonna have a three-part show tonight. It's not going to be over 3 weeks, but it's going to be over three parts. And three different things that's been on my mind that I want to talk about. Two are trapping and two are a person. And one is just being a responsible person, and it's going to be the last section. So once we get done talking about a little niche that I think trappers can earn some extra income with in your local area and why, if you don't want to have your nuts kicked about the economy and why you need to start a small business and kind of what you need to be thinking about for that, you can disengage once we get done with that. But if you're interested in your well-being and future, I would at least take the few minutes we're going to talk about that and why it's so important, because I guarantee you, unless you go down the rabbit holes that I go down to just because of my curiosity of how things work, you're probably going to be a little bit surprised. But I do want to talk about a couple things first. I went to the PA show, and then that very next weekend I was at the FTA show, which the interview with Jeff was last week. We've got one more to do with him up at the Nationals, where he's going to talk about some of the absolute craziness that happened to him on the road this year. But I didn't want to mix those two together. And I got some other really cool interviews. I'm going to try to mix in me and them and try to spread them out even further, so it'll just be a more entertaining mix, I hope, for people that are listening to the show. The other thing I want to talk about is we have a new sponsor on Trappin' Radio. And if you could call him up or email him, you will see his details down in the show notes for doing this. I'm absolutely maxed out on sponsors. I can't take any more. But because of what this is and what I got to play with a little bit, it's one that I think that you'll get a lot of value out of from him being a sponsor. And it's Dakota Snare Lines, but more than that, it's his Webby Knives. And that's kind of what he wants me to sponsor more than just Dakota Snare Line. And you'll see a banner ad on the side. You can click on that and go directly to Dakota Lines, where you'll see the Webby Knives. And he's got some really cool flashing knives. I mean, high quality flashing knives. And more than that, he gave me some of these samples to play around with. And one of them is a folding lockback knife that uses razor blades, but it's a cool looking one. It doesn't look like something that just comes straight off of a generic conveyor belt somewhere, or something you would see in a dollar store, with a razor blade on it. I mean, this is a cool looking lockback knife that you can see on his website. And how I tested that thing is, as most of y'all know, that I have ducks and I'm learning about the ducks all the time. And when you buy ducks and chickens, you pay extra to get all females or just one male or whatever you're doing. And pretty much everybody lies to you, or they don't really know either. So we had 10 pecking ducks, which are the Aflac ducks. If you don't know what they are, they're really big. They're about the size of a small goose. We had 6 males and 4 females, and they're starting to become of teenage age, where they're looking at females and their hormones started kicking in. And out of pure self-defense of my females, we had to cull the males, which are now smoked and in the freezer. And if you've never had smoked duck, oh dude, you ain't living. We had our local barbecue guy down here smoke them for us. He's never done them, and I think I ate a whole one last night. I mean, it is amazing what that is like. They were young ducks. They were domesticated, free range, very healthy, no gaminess whatsoever. It reminded me more of quail than it has any other duck I had. But I had to harvest those ducks, so me and Travis had to do the deed out in the backyard. And then we plucked the ducks, and then I used one of the Webby knives to disassemble some and to gut and take necks off and feet off. And that knife is bad to the bone. I will never be without that knife again, because I went through all 6 of those ducks without having to change a razor blade. So because I've had some of those before, as soon as you look at them or set them outside, for 10 minutes and the air hits them, they get dull. It's not that type of razor blade. These razor blades did very well. and I hadn't had to replace it yet. Plus, I've been using it now for about a week and a half in the lure shop, opening up boxes and tape and all kind of different things with it. In the because it is so handy, and when it does go dull, I bet I can hit that thing on a sharpening steel, bring it back to life really quick. And when it gets too bad, I mean, instead of sitting there and have to fight with a knife during trapping season in your fur shed when you're skinning, it gets too dull, you can't hit it on the steel, you got to put it on a rock. You know, this thing, you just flip out the blades and you can rock and roll with it. And it looks good. I mean, it does. It looks good. It looks like something you'd spend a lot of money on. And it's not that expensive at all. So check out the Webby Knives. You can email him or call him. I'd really appreciate it. And all the sponsors that we have, guys, the server cost that I have to be able to do this show is not like a trapping form. So when there's 10,000 trappers that try to download or listen to one of these shows, that's probably 10 years worth of something like Trapper Man as far as their server space per show. So I've had to actually purchase a lease on our own private servers in Canada to be able to pull the power that we need to do this show, and it's a house payment. It's more than a car payment, it's a house payment. Well, it's a Southern house payment, I'll say that. It's not a New York or something like that house payment. It's several hundred dollars a month just to be able to do that, and that's kind of what these sponsors help me do. They don't cover all the costs by any means, but it does take some of that off. So if you enjoy listening to Trapping Radio and you get out of this, you know, with F&T and Oki Cable and Trap and Dunlap Lures and Wildlife Control Supplies and Dakota Snare Line, give them a call. It won't take you 5 seconds. I'm not asking you for money. Just take, you know, 10, 15 seconds, call up there. If you see them at a show, just tell them appreciate you sponsoring the radio show. I get a lot out of it. And then you'll see that one thing you can count on, the only people that I allow to be sponsors are guys that I don't have to worry about how they treat you. And that's one, if you're new in this game, that's one thing that ought to mean a lot to you. So if one of these sponsors starts abusing trappers or members of Trapping Radio, they're gone in a heartbeat. I won't play any games with that whatsoever, because money to me is not near as important as reputation. And that's one thing I know all these guys very personally, and I know their outlook on how to treat people and customers, and that's one of the reasons. So they're helping keep this radio going because of the cost of now, because of so many people that listen to it. So, and just to let them know that people know that they're doing that means a lot. So I would ask you to do that. Now, one of the things, the first part of this show tonight, I want to talk about, you know, there's an influx of trappers that come into trapping all the time. And I'm sure it's been that way forever. But with the internet, and you have all these trapping shows on, and you have, you like the Quality Deer Management Association and stuff like that, talking predators and you know, Facebook, and it's I'm just amazed at how trapping 5 years ago, no one knew it existed, and pretty much anybody that watches cable TV now understands it, and they see it from a different light, because it's just not some type of caveman out there trying to figure out a way to torture an animal the way that most people have been led through miscommunication, misadvertising of people that are trying to get money so they're rich and they really don't care about the animals to begin with. But now people are seeing it, so we're getting more and more influx. Even though fur prices are down, the reason people are getting into trapping is different than it was when I got started. You know, when I got started into it, I'm in Alaska making, I don't know, $1,400 a month pre-tax. I could sell a Martin for $50 or $60. I could sell a Red Fox for $50 or $60. And, you know, you catch 8 or 10 animals, well, you just, you know, got 50% more income. So it was a huge difference to me. And then I've carried that mindset in my own personal trapping. But what I'm noticing, and I don't think it's a bad thing at all, is that there's a lot of people getting into it for a lot of different reasons. And now the second part of this show, when we talk about a niche that trappers definitely should be taking advantage of in their local area, you'll see why I'm saying that, because it is drastically different than going out and just fur trapping. But I'm getting a lot of these calls, and a lot of it has to do with deer. Some of it has to do with sheep, and some of it's with cows. Some of it's just because people see coyotes and they're afraid of them. And when they see them, they just assume something bad is going on, which could or could not be the case. You know, honestly, that's just the truth. I've got farmers in this county. No, not this county. The county south of me in Marion County that I know, back when I was doing a lot of trapping in that area, that I could have picked up an extra 8, 10, 12 coyotes on with very little effort. And one of those farmers that would never let me trap coyotes, now he loved me trapping beaver, but he wouldn't let me trap coyotes, is he's like, I've had cows here for 15 years. Those coyotes have been here for 15 years, and they've never bothered one of my cows. Now, he's not interested in deer, rabbit numbers, or anything like that. And in his mind, if I took those coyotes out, he wouldn't know what coyotes were going to come in and how they were going to react to his cows. And I think there's a lot of wisdom to that, actually. Even though as trappers, we want more ground and be able to trap coyotes, there is some wisdom to that. So when you're talking to people, you know, use some common sense about what it is. Just don't have the kill 'em all mentality, because sometimes that's not the best thing to fit the customer or your landowner's needs. If a cow's not bothering anything, but he's seeing too many and needs to take some of the numbers down, I think that's fine to go. But I do think that farmer did have a point, and I've talked to him about 4 months ago, and he still has never had a problem with coyotes in his cows or his calves or anything else that he knows about at all. So keep that in mind as you're going. But we're seeing all these new guys come into the trapping side of things. And, you know, they get online, they get some videos, they order some lures, they get their traps, they go out. And the question that I'm getting a lot, which I don't know if it's just because I've been in this so long and I've done so much coyote trapping, that it's hard for me to remember back what it was like, but you know, they read somewhere, it could be on Wolfer Nation or some type of Trapping Forest or Trapping Talk on Facebook or something. If you're on one piece of property, you need to switch up your sets and your lures and baits. And in my opinion, guys, that is absolutely solid information and guidance right there. I mean, it really is. It's rock solid. And the reason for that is, if you've got a family of coyotes and you're trapping something that's, even if it's 400 or 500 acres, unless you're in a place where you got two groups that meet on that particular property, you're only dealing with one group of coyotes for the most part, unless it's going to be during dispersal or something, because there's always it depends answer and pretty much anything to do with any type of wildlife. But for the most part, you got one group of family that's living there, and it's their home. They've been there. They know what's going on. You're not going to catch every cow that comes by your set. I don't care who you are or what you're using or what you're doing. So these cows are going to be exposed to what you're doing as a family group before you have a chance to take care of them. So if you go in and you've got, you know, like a lot of guys say we use a Leggett style set or a Charlie Robbins dirt hole set like O'Gorman uses a lot, or they see a portable pocket from me, or they see this, and they really like where the information's coming from. They see the proof of the pictures and the catches and stuff like that. They believe in that set, and they go out. And if you go to, say, 300 acres, 400 acres, because that seems to be about the size, and some of these calls are coming down to 50 acres. So you're definitely not dealing with, you know, one group of coyotes. And if you go out and you're locked into this certain formulaic type of set and you repeat it over and over again, think about what's happening when a coyote comes down through there. He's not going to get caught in the first set he sees. There's a good chance of that anyway, no matter what you're doing. So he's going to come in contact with that a couple of times. And just as phobic as a coyote is and as high strung as their instincts are, you can see how you may get some issues with that. Because it would be like, if I was going to set a trap for you, and it was going to be, I don't know, an exploding McDonald's bag, and there, you found one of those bags, you'd be really curious about it and wanting to see what's going on with it, even if you didn't like McDonald's. But if you went outside your house, between your house and your car and your driveway, there's 10 of these McDonald's bags. And the first one you come up to, you're kind of nervous about it, and you're sitting back, and maybe you hit it with a stick to see, you know, did someone put dog crap in it or a snake? And it blows up, but it doesn't hurt you. And then you see those other McDonald's bags. Do you think really it's going to make you go over and start playing with the next McDonald's bags? You know, I mean, that's a childish example. But that's kind of what's going on, especially in states like Pennsylvania, or you get on some type of public ground area. That's exactly what's happening to a lot of coyotes. And it's the reason, like in Pennsylvania, I think a lot of guys have a lot of trouble with coyotes, is there's so many type of similar sets that a coyote's seeing its whole life that they just see those as danger to begin with. And that's where it becomes the trapper's responsibility to have the intelligence and creativity to change stuff up so the coyote doesn't see the same McDonald's bag. Maybe it's a McDonald's bag and a Burger King bag, or it's a McDonald's bag and a stump, or a McDonald's bag and a used tire. I mean, that way it's not just so obvious that something is out there that's trying to get you, to force you into an action, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And we all have people that we listen to and that we believe in, and we all have sets that are our pet sets, and we all have pet lures and pet baits and pet locations and all of that stuff. And you can, and that's part of the reason it's so easy for trap thieves to get on a lot of trappers, is it's very similar no matter what they do. So if, and just imagine if you're the type of guy that traps in woods, you've got these little food plots out there, and every time you come up to one of these food plots, right on the edge where the road's coming through, you pop in a dirt hole set, someone finds that set. There's 10 of these little food plots on the farm. They just got to find the food plots. They'll find your set because they can see the pattern of that. And I think coyotes can definitely pick up on patterns. Patterns are, you don't have to have a lot of intelligence to see patterns, because, you know, that's the way all the way back through history, people have associated stuff with. I mean, if you see a McDonald's Golden Arches, you know what it is as when you're probably 3 years old. You don't know what the word McDonald's is. You don't know anything, but you know what that represents. Same thing with Coca-Cola. It could be Duck Dynasty. Symbols and patterns, which is what a symbol is, it's very easy for the brain to recognize. And I think coyotes, in a lot of ways, are like humans in that point. So you don't want to pattern yourself. So then you've got your pet stuff. You now know that you don't want to pattern yourself, but you want to catch these animals. And people get kind of tore up about, you know, different dirt holes, or especially the one that seems to be more prevalent is flat sets. Now guys, there's three types of sets. That's it. You've got a dirt hole, you've got a flat set, and you got blind sets. That's it. You can go into snares, but that's not really a trap set. That's a whole different piece of equipment and thought process. A dirt hole is a hole. Now this dirt hole can be 2 inches, a half inch, 6 inches, or big enough to put a cow in. It's a hole. It doesn't necessarily have to have a backing, but it can have a backing. It can have a dirt pattern with a trap in it, or no dirt pattern. It can be deep, it can be shallow, it can be ragged, it could look man-made, it could look like a machine's done it, it could look like a mouse done it, or it can look like an armadillo's done it, or a grizzly bear's done it. That's just what it is. And all those are dirt holes. Now, flat set is even more easy to mix up. And part of the reason I think a lot of professional predator control guys lean towards them is because they're easier to not have a pattern on. Now, you won't think this way if you're looking at a lot of books, but if you understand what a flat set is, the opportunities around you on a travel way of a coyote are endless. In a mile section of a trail that's got coyote tracks in it, I guarantee you, if you wanted to, you could put in 300 flat sets, not one of them be the same. Because a flat set is a stimulant, whether it be lure or visual. So you got smell or visual with a trap in front of it. That's it. So think about if you just walk down a trail, or if you go to a park or go out into your yard and just walk around, you'll see that there is umpteen million ways to either put a odor or a visual stimulant on something, in something, under something, on the side of something, on the top of something, smeared on something. And how you think the coyote just coming down that trail is gonna try to get close enough to either lick, roll, or feel its curiosity, or pee on, or defecate on that stimulant is where you put your trap. So it's absolutely endless. Now, blind sets are very simple. Where you see tracks in trails, or where you think an animal's gonna step, you blend in sets. So if you're going out and you're on a small piece of property, and you're gonna run dirt holes, or some dirt holes, and especially in the summer, you know, my formula that I kind of keep is 70% flat sets, 30% dirt holes, because usually the pups will get caught in the dirt holes, and you gotta be more creative, have more time on the ground, and cover more area for the adults, and that's why you need to mix it up more. And they're a lot of times more hesitant to come into a set. So that's the reason that 30-70. A lot of times the pups get caught pretty quick. That's more of a pup set anyway, for the most part. And by having that mix, it seems to work pretty good. Now, if it's 60-40, 50-50, whatever, I mean, you know, don't get too crazy with following what I say on a formula on that. But, you know, it's majority flat sets to dirt holes. But if you're going to run dirt holes, think about how you're going to do the dirt hole. The classic dirt hole is in front of a grass clump, and you dig a hole and you have a little trap pattern, and you put your trap in the pattern and you sift it back over. Well, that could be one. Now, if you made a small hole that was really deep, that could be a different one. And if you made a hole that was 6-8 inches around and really deep, that would be a third different totally looking flat set. Now, if you just change where you put it on a backing, if it wasn't in front of a grass clump and it was on flat ground, and you really kick back the dirt, that's going to look very different from a classic standard dirt hole set. If you put it where it's up in brush or grass or something like that, that's going to look totally different. If you change the backing up where, you know, it was a log or rock or something like that, that's going to give it a different value. You could not have any type of dirt pattern, but kick the dirt just everywhere and blend in your set where the animal's going to sneak in. Totally different look there. You have step downs, and you know, you have all these different things, and basically you can have 30 different dirt holes on a piece of property that will not look the same at all. So don't get caught up into what it is. Think about size hole. Think about how it looks. Does it look like it's perfectly round? Bill Nelson used to always have a fork with him, a metal fork, like out of the kitchen. And he would bend down the tine so it looked like the shape of a hole. And he would scratch up the dirt hole, because that's the way, if a mouse or someone was going to dig at the hole, it looks more natural. That would change it over just punching a hole in the ground with some of these punches that I see at trapping conventions, where you beat them in the ground you know, where that's a perfect circle. If you're using a portable pocket or a piece of PVC or something, a toy like that, and it's got bait in a hole and you're covering it up some way, that could be a flat set or a dirt hole either way. A dirt hole could be a hollow in a fence post. A dirt hole could be a hollow in a tree. I've used a lot in Texas, and in the way the oil fracking industry is moving all across the country, you probably see this in more places. We don't have that here in Tennessee, really, that I know of. But where they lay those pipes down in there for a long time, you can pack bait and stuff and lure up in those pipes and put a trap in front of it, and it's a dirt hole, even though it's not in dirt. It could be a tailpipe of an old rusted car, truck, or something sitting out in a field next to a travelway of a couch. You can pack bait and lure in that thing. It's a dirt hole. It's metal, but it's not in the ground. It's still a dirt hole. It's a hole. So your creativity is the only limiting factor in making dirt holes. And the same thing with the flat sets. You know, the one of the classic, there's a couple of really classic flat sets. There's three that come to mind right off the top of my head. One is like the Matt Jones, which I use a lot of. We have a grass clump that stands out, and you smear bait or lure in the bottom on the ground in that grass clump, and you blend a set in front of it. The other is like a urine post set. Some of them use gland lure. Some of them use different mixtures of synthetic egg and urine or skunk or whatever the particular formula is. And they'll put that on a stick to get urined on. Some people char the stick, which would be different from just having that. Some people use a bone. You could actually use a feather. You could use a skull. You could use pretty much whatever you could come up with, you know, and it wouldn't really matter that much. But they would all be very, very different. The other one that's a classic that a lot of people use is they have a grass clump of some kind or a log or a rock, and they beat in a wobble hole set with just a rebar. They beat it in 8-10 inches, kind of, you know, round it out with their hand where it's like a cone. They put the lure and bait in there. Very effective set. Some people do two holes, one's bait, one lure. Some people use three holes where it's a bait lure and a gland lure, and they put urine on the back end. I mean, you can have 10 holes if you want to, them little punch things, and have, you know, something different in one, a feather in one, piece of natural bait in one, you know, because even though that is a hole, really, over a couple of days, the dirt kind of caves in on it anyway, and it's more of a flat set. And if you put it in high grass, you can't see it at all, so that's the reason most people consider it a flat set. What you call it's pretty irrelevant. But I mean, just off that alone, you can get 8 or 10 different punch holes or something like that as flat sets on a property. But just walk down a trail. If there is a tree that's right next to the trail, we'll smear some lure on it, put a trap in front of it. It is that simple, guys. It is that simple. If you've got a thick bush or something that's short, you know, like it's herbaceous of some kind, think of like a knockout rose that you can see very easily as you just drive around because everybody's got them now. If you were to smear some lure bait on the base of that rose and kind of watch the ground around it, and you can kind of visualize how coyote's going to come up to it, that's a flat set. If you got a big oak tree, or especially around here, one that I like to use are the shaggy bark hickory nuts, because they've got great big bark cracks in them, almost like some of the pine trees do. And I can take bait or lure and literally smell, take a stick and smear that in the cracks of that tree. And it's really hard for an animal to get that out of. But it's got to be right on its travel way. There's no visual with this whatsoever. You know, in a separate part of that crack, I could take a paper clip, especially on a pine tree, and take one small feather, I'm talking one small feather, and pin that into that bark, you know, a couple inches above the bait or lure. That's totally different than just having the bait or lure. Completely up to you on how creative that you're going to be with this stuff. and just walk around, look anywhere. But when you're picking these flat sets out, guys, think about your control. What is there that's going to help a coyote kind of like guide him where to put his feet? Because you don't want to be trying to cat trap these coyotes where you're moving a bunch of stuff around. That's the beauty of a flat set. If you've got a log that, like what you'll see a lot on logging roads, trees and stuff have fell over during ice storms or snowstorms, and then people cut them with chainsaws, and they're just a couple of feet off of the road, and they're all jagged where they broke up, and they pull them with four-wheelers and stuff like that. You can smear bait and lure up in that thing and you know, blend a trap in front of the thing and be rocking and rolling. The only thing that I would advise someone not to do with a flat set is have a trap pattern. So you don't want to see bare dirt unless it's all bare dirt. So if you're in you know, spruce or pine or juniper, well, use the stuff, the duff that's on the ground for a top coat, so it looks like there's nothing's there. That's the beauty of a flat set. And because coyotes are so phobic and their instincts are wired so tight, when you have no visual stimulus, like I do with the portable pockets, and I can hide those things where people can't find them, there's not a whole lot there screaming at their instincts, which is part of the reason the flat sets work better on adult coyotes. And the flat sets will also pick up cats and fox and coons and possums and everything else. So they're not limited. I think a lot of trappers don't really get heavy in the flat sets or creative with them, is because to them, in our state of mind, there's not a lot there. You know, if you dig a great big old 9-inch hole and you got dirt slinging out everywhere, something's going to see that from a long way off. That gives the trapper more confidence. But it may not give the animal more confidence. But if you're using flat sets for coyotes and you're mixing it up all the time, even if you've got 20 flat sets going down a trail that you see tracks on one of these small acreages, they all look different and they all smell different and the traps all blended in, the coyote somewhere down through there is going to investigate one of those, but he's not going to be like you seeing all those McDonald bags leading out to your vehicle in the morning to give you a warning of danger. But that's what a lot of people go out and trap like. I mean, it's so freaking obvious that someone's doing something in a lot of different ways that I think it puts animals on guard, and that's what it is. So if you have a pet set, figure out ways to just change it up. Change the dirt pattern, change the hole, change your backing, change the way the dirt hole is. Does it have a big hump like if a badger dug it, or is it more, you know, open like a rodent or something has dug it? You can totally change all those up, but it's totally up to you. So when you go to these things, you know, really, especially on small acreage, guys, use a lot of different looking sets. Now, when it comes to lure and bait, I recommend that too. If you've got lure A that's like your best producing, and you go put it on every one of those, what you've just done is put the McDonald bags back out there. Because if he comes up and he's got that smell, that smell, that smell, that smell, that smell, it's not going to take his brain very long to go, something ain't right here. But if you got three or four different lures and a couple of different baits, and you got some urines and you got some natural baits, you can have each one of those at a set. You can have combinations of those at a set, but don't lean too heavy on one lure alone on small acreage. You know, you're asking for trouble. So you get out there and you move all these different lures and stuff around, some just bait, some just gland lure, some a combination of curiosity lure and bait. And I mean, you can see how it's going. You can easily change all of that up. So even if you've got a couple of sets that may look a little too close, but you totally mix up the smells coming out of there, now you've changed that just enough where it doesn't look like the McDonald bags going out to your car. And that's what it is. And you don't have to have, now please listen to me on this, guys, you do not have to have a set that has been shown in a book or video or you see online somewhere. A dirt hole is nothing but a hole with a trap in it. There's a thousand different ways to do a hole. A flat set is nothing but stimulus with a trap in front of it that's blended in. That's it. So just because a well-known person does something a certain way and he's got all these cool stories and all this why you should do A, B, C, and D and this, and this will catch all the coyotes, which is a lie. And, you know, this is the best set, which I guarantee you across the country, to somebody he's lying and not even knowing it. You get into this repetition. Now, repetition is good if you're covering a lot of ground and you're dealing with only one or two sets per family group. Like the way Randy Smith does it. He's covering two or three counties at a time. He may be on a farm that's 3,000 acres and only putting two traps. And those coyotes are never going to see that he's doing that 80 miles away. So you've got to really use the logical part of your brain when you're thinking about what you're doing. Systems like his is totally different than someone that's trying to catch animals on small acreage. So just be creative and you won't have any, I don't think, any trouble whatsoever catching these animals. But you've got to learn to be creative. And good, bad, or ugly, the thing that made America the greatest country in the world is Americans used to be creative. And that's not really the case anymore. So if you've got to learn to be creative, that's okay. Just learn to be creative. Because now in our society, everything is by steps, a formula, a recipe, and different things like that. And for some reason, and I think it's the public schools personally, I think they're teaching kids not to think, but what to think. And then when someone gets in a situation where they have to think, and there's no formula or recipe on what to think, they kind of vapor lock. And I'm kind of seeing that in trappers, especially newer ones, because they think it's got to be this way, at this location, and yada, 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 just like a recipe, like you're cooking. And if you're going to go down that route, you're never going to reach your full potential. So if you're not a very creative person, just spend a couple afternoons before trapping season comes and go out and either physically or mentally walk around different areas and how can I make a set work here where it looks natural, it doesn't look forced, I can use what's here with the least amount of energy and the least amount of time at the set without going into Lego construction mode. And once your brain starts doing that, the natural brain will start getting more creative and more creative. And then once you kind of figure that out, you'll figure out that then you'll start seeing patterns of what works and what doesn't. And you'll be rocking and rolling in your own personal trapping. To me, that's the goal of trapping. The more creative guys usually win. Or the guys that cover a lot of ground that aren't very creative, but just use it with you know, back muscle. And there's nothing wrong with that, but as I'm getting older and fatter, I kind of like the creative side. Now, the second part I want to talk about the show is, as most of y'all know, I do, like my Instagram, I do a lot with permaculture, growing different things, the ducks, the chickens. I'm really into that. Been into that for years. I mean, for y'all that don't know this, and this is where the economy, where we've talked about that before, really confuses people. 15 years ago or 16 years ago, I used to be an organic truck farmer and a trapper. See, they don't have to be separate. They don't have to be at odds with each other. There was a niche for chemical-free agriculture in markets when they just got started over in Chattanooga. I'd grow all these really cool plants they couldn't buy in the store. I'd sell them at high prices. They were happy. I was happy. And everything, you know, just rocked and rolled on through there. And that has changed over the last 15 or 16 years. I really don't want to do that anymore. I like growing stuff more than I like picking stuff and selling vegetables and fruit to people. That's kind of my thing. But because I'm kind of like, you know, putting my fingers into that side of the world and different things like that, and there's so many got people that are getting into that type stuff that really don't understand nature. They've never done anything basically but go to school, go to work, come home, watch TV, pray they got enough money to retire and go on a 2-week vacation. That's been their whole world. But now, for a lot of different reasons, which we're not going to go into right now, the miniature homesteading movement is huge. It's way bigger than trapping. Way bigger. People want to have their own chickens because they don't like how they're treated by Tyson. They want to have their own ducks because females have done the research and they realize that if you eat duck eggs, which is different from a chicken egg, that it's really hard to have calcium problems when you're older because there's one mineral in a duck egg that's really hard to get in anything else that your body absorbs very well. So a lot of people are into ducks. People are wanting to grow their own sheep because they're not as big or massive or cost as much as infrastructure as cattle do. There's a lot of guys that are getting into pigs, especially stock cows, all this different stuff. And they're growing a lot of food. And what that's happening that a trapper should be paying attention to is you're bringing a large, huge, massive part of the population into an area where they're lost. And trappers that are creative and can see the niche that's being made for them, it's being laid at your feet, guys, if you see it. And you don't look at yourself through the eyes of the economy where it's me, the trapper, is against some soccer mom wannabe hippie that wants to grow her own chickens and fruit. Because y'all probably have way more in common than you realize. Because in case y'all ain't figured it out from some of the stuff I've talked about and said, I'm that trapper, almost hippie person. They're one and the same. There doesn't have to be this line. But the people that are coming into this, they may not at first really be on board with the trapping part. And here's where the niche and where trappers have to be, what's the correct term here? Evolving in their thinking and evolving to the world that we live in now and not 1980 is because I've got such a presence online, I'm getting inundated with people that are begging me all over the country for some type of solution. And a lot of times the solution is exclusion, which sounds a lot like ADC work, or it could be trapping once the exclusion may or may not work depending on how far they want to take it. So here's the calls that I'm getting. And if you're a trapper that's looking to make more money, you might want to pay attention to this. I got off the phone this morning before the radio show with a guy in Florida. No, that was last week. That was last week with Florida. This was Missouri this morning. And he has runner ducks and Muscovy ducks. And he's wanting the eggs. And he's growing out broiler so he can eat the duck meat like I got to eat last night. And he's got all this stuff growing for him. He's got their pen. He's done everything that people are telling him on YouTube and Pinterest and all these little forums that are out there and stuff like that. And he's losing ducks like on a bi-daily basis. And that's a lot different than a farmer at Tyson that loses 150 chickens a day. I mean, he don't care. They're not his chickens anyway. They're Tyson's. But this is very personal to that person losing these runner ducks. you know, their kids are petting them and feeding them and watering them, and they built ponds for them, and they go out there and they're finding legs and wings and feathers, and they have no idea what to do. Now, as a trapper, we've dealt with animals. We know how they go through the territory. We know how they get into things. We know, you know, different ways maybe to keep them out. We've got all this information that's open to us if we pay attention to the world around us, because we're doing that every day. So you've got this large market that's clueless about nature, real nature, not pets or not a zoo or not national forest, but real nature in their own backyard or their own little homestead. Absolutely clueless. You know, one of the biggest things, well, how do I keep coyotes from eating my sheep? We'll get a dog. Well, guess what? The coyotes figure out they howl on one side. The dog runs over there to do its job, and the other coyotes come in and eat the sheep. You can get two dogs, but the two dogs are going to run off together. It's not very prevalent. You can have, you got llamas and donkeys and all kind of different things people use. And coyotes will figure out sooner or later how to get around that defense mechanism, because the coyote has all the time in the world and learns very quickly. But they read that, they get these animals, and all of a sudden now they're getting losses, and it's their pets and their food and their hobby, and they need a solution. Okay, this is where you could do probably, I don't know, online courses, you could do, especially in your local area. Now, if you're really hardcore rural, maybe a little harder, but you could probably pick up some work. But trappers don't usually think of themselves this way, because they don't give their permission to be, quote, experts, even though they are, compared to the population around them in certain areas. So I'm giving you guys permission to be experts when it comes to animals, because by God, you are. More than any biologist or any little overly schooled, undereducated peckerhead at a college that doesn't even grow anything is telling people, you are the experts. So I'm giving you permission to be an expert when it comes to animals, because you are. More than anybody else probably in your area. So what I'm seeing from all these calls, there was a couple days ago, the Florida with the pecking ducks, which is what I got. Weasels getting into chickens. Raccoons getting into chickens. Coyotes getting into sheep. Coyotes killing emus. I've had calls on ostriches, which I figured an ostrich would probably take care of itself, but apparently not. And then you got the calves. You've got people that are trying to raise rabbits. You've got all these different feed sources for predator animals that people are putting in high densities, along with, if they're doing something like I'm doing, a Garden of Eden grocery store for a raccoon or a possum or a fox or anything else like that, because there's literally food everywhere you go in on my 2 acres. And they're doing the same thing. Maybe not to the scale that I am, but they're growing bigger gardens, and they're putting in muscadine vines and grapes and fruit trees and berries and all this. So they're having all this concentrated food source, and now they're getting more rabbits, and they're getting mice, and they're getting way more birds. And you can see what I'm saying. If we were talking about not a homestead, but just somewhere out in the wilderness, you'd be going, my God, that's where I need to put a trap. And it is. So the smart trapper, once he understands that this is going on, and you may not be seeing it as much because you don't have as much exposure as I do on the line. I've had people contact me from different forums to ask me to sign up because people are having problems. And most of the time, from a trapper's point of view, it's pretty simple. Now, you may be thinking, well, no one's going to pay for that. You'll be surprised what people pay for when it comes to consultation. If you wanted to grow a yard like mine, and you wanted me to design a yard like mine for you, especially since I have my PDC certificate, Permaculture Design Course certificate, you're probably going to, I'm going to go out there for a day and I'm going to charge you $800 to $1,200 probably to design your yard with all the aspects and functions and stuff like mine has. I'm going to give you that design and then you're going to go out and you're going to do that. Well, people that don't know something are looking for information. And a lot of the crap that you find online is just crap. So eventually they lead down the path that they're trying to find experts. And since I've gave you permission to be an expert in what you're an expert in, now you've got a field for a large market that needs help. And you as a business owner are going to give them value, which is the way the free market should work. So if you start writing for a local small newspaper, or a blog that really gets heavy into the search engine optimization, which that it's called SEO. You can go into, buy all kind of books on Kindle or whatever, learn all about that. We can't get into all that today. So you target a certain area, like here in Dunlap, on something like this. If this was what I was going to do for a nice side income stream, I would really target Chattanooga. I would target Knoxville, probably Murfreesboro, different places that are around me that are just a little bit more urban than I am, but not in the main city per se, because that's where a lot of this stuff's going on. People are scared to get too far out in the country because the boogeyman lives out there, which is good. I like that. But so you're not trying to get super rural, because super rural people, they're not going to be as interested. But what I'm seeing more and more as people are moving out of urban areas into more rural areas like I'm at, to try to have a yard and property like I have with all the food sources and stuff here, because it's important to them. And guys, it's irrelevant if you agree with why they're doing it. It's a person that needs help that you can help, and they will trade their value of their money for your experience. That's a very good business model, because you're not having to buy something, repackage something, build something, weld something, ship something, all that stuff like I have to do with the lures and baits. You show up, you're trading your experience for money, and you leave. Really good business model. So some of the stuff that I'm seeing that guys need to understand from a trapper's point of view is, maybe the answer is not always just kill them all. It could be exclusion. Now, it could be explaining exclusion, or it could be physically doing the exclusion. Either way, I think a trapper that gets into it where he consults the exclusion, then does the exclusion, and then down the road, if he still has some issues, has a set of trap. Now, he's got three income streams from one customer. Pretty cool. So let's just, for an example, like one of them that I spent a lot of time on one forum with was weasels getting into chicken houses. Well, most people aren't going to have, but they go buy a coop from somewhere. It's not set up to keep a weasel out. A weasel, if it wants in somewhere, is pretty much going to get in somewhere. I mean, they're small. Same with a mink. It's hard to keep something like that out. And people are trying to catch these weasels and these great big coon traps they're getting from Tractor Supply and Home Depot and stuff like that. Well, they can get the mink to go, or the weasel to go in there, but they're not setting off the trap. Now, a smart trapper could go, well, you know, I've got these squirrel traps that you spent $9 on, or whatever Alan Hewitt has them for up at Wildlife Control Supplies, that'll definitely catch a weasel. Or you have weasel boxes, you know, and you're going to have to be creative, guys, on where you don't have a live animal for a homeowner that goes into shock when they see an animal squeal because they think that that's like evil. So be creative about how you're doing this, but you can figure out how to catch a weasel where it doesn't make the homeowner uncomfortable. There again, we're going back to creativity. And the simple answer for these guys was, you know, and I was doing this for free because this is not exactly this is just a niche that I see because it's in my lap. And the hardest part of business is to be able to say no to stuff. But if I was in an area that had this, you know, especially like on the outskirts of Columbus, Ohio, or LA, or Chicago, or, you know, wherever you've got the ultra-modern hipster local food movements going on, stuff like that, you're going to have a lot of this. And there's probably more in your area than you realize. Well, I'm sitting there thinking, well, they got this trap. They don't want to buy a new trap. The weasel's getting all over the pan and not firing it off because the weasel's too small. So I had them go and put washers on the edge of the pan just to the point where it wouldn't fire. Next time weasel comes in with a little pile of feathers, they got a weasel. And then they had to close off the cage because a weasel could get out of the standard coon cage. So they had to enclose it with plywood so the weasel couldn't get out and change the door, which all changed the pan pressure. And we had to go through this process. But if I was in their area, I could go over to them and go, that trap's really not designed to this. Now, I can tell you how, with a lot of effort and energy and money and time spent, how you can make it work. Or you can rent these cages for me, which is designed for this, and then, you know, you can keep them to, you know, for a couple of weeks or a month or whatever. Because remember, like a good squirrel trap, like those little wire ones, cost $8. You can rent that for $20 over and over and over again. If weasels are a problem in your area, or mink, you may make them a little bigger, smaller, change the wire around, be creative. Whatever you need, whatever you see as the experts you need to change, you need to change it. So you could lease that out. Plus, they're going to pay you to come over and figure out how them not to have that problem. So now you got two income streams from one customer, possibly. One is they're going to pay you for a consulting fee to come over. You're going to learn from every one you do, so you're going to get smarter every time you're doing it. So basically, you're getting an education for free. You can rent them the trap, or you can set the trap and come back and do it more like ADC. You could look at their chicken coop and go, well, the reason the chickens are getting killed inside the coop is a coon can reach his hand through there, grab a chicken, and try to, you know, pull it out through brunt force. Or a coon can tear this wire up. Well, I've got this wire that we, you know, that a coon cannot tear up, just like on my chicken coop outside. It's the same wire that's on a bobcat cage. Coon can't get into my chicken coop. So I can put this over your wire. You know, it's so much a foot for me to do this. That should fix your problem. The homeowner's going to be tickled. He's not going to have to figure out where to get this wire. It's going to take you probably an hour to do. You can charge probably, you know, $100 to $400 for everything involved. You're happy, they're happy, you've got a reputation being built. That's a really cool way to make money. The other thing when it comes to, like, on my chicken runs, because of feral dogs here, I put predator wire around my chicken runs, which is not a complicated thing, but to someone that doesn't really know what it is, it's a complicated thing. And I've seen, and the reason I know this is because I am a trapper and I go to places that raise deer. Inside their breeding pens, they do this. And it's really, really hard for a coyote to figure out how to get through this. So keep this in mind. There's all different kind of designs of this, but the simplest one is the best. If you've got a fence that comes down to ground level, you can hook another piece of wire. You could dig down a couple inches if you want to. Mine are just laying on top of the ground and I throw mulch over them. But you hook a piece of wire on a 90 degree angle going out from the pen to the field where the coyotes or bobcats or foxes are trying to dig in under the fence. And you put down about a 3-foot piece of wire. And I'm just laying mine slap on the ground. So when a feral dog comes up to my chickens, which I've seen them do, they come up to the fence, they're used to digging under stuff, they start digging down, but they're hitting wire. And their brains are not efficient enough to realize if they back up, eventually they would get under the wire that's flat on the ground. They could dig a tunnel underneath it, but they don't. They sit there and fight that wire until Mr. 12 Gauge talks to them. because if they're digging at my chickens, I ain't giving them a second chance, personally. Unless it's obviously someone's dog and we go have a heart-to-heart come-to-Jesus talk about them letting the dog out that's going to eat my chickens. But having that predator wire there, you could be the guy that can predator-proof people's chickens and ducks and everything else. If you've got raccoons, you'll definitely want predator wire because they will dig under a fence. You will definitely, you know, you can build runs for people for very little money with a max amount of profit. Like I've got on my ducks, I'm going to get the cheaper cattle panels. I get them for $19. They're 16 foot long, 50 inches high. And then I get welded wire and I'm zip tying those, the real heavy duty zip ties. So nothing small can go through like a house cat. And I'm putting the smaller wire on the inside of the pen where if a dog tries to get a hold of the small wire, it's got to pull it through the big wire, the cattle panels, and it can't do it. Now, if I ever get where I'm having problems with raccoons, because a raccoon can climb over the fence, I can get a very small unit of electric fence wire and run it where it's 6 inches over the top of that fence. When a coon gets up there, it's going to blow him off. Or a house cat for that existence, but I haven't had that issue yet. But see, knowing how to go through those procedures, keep them from digging, keep them from going through, and keep them from going over the top, you can do that, you can explain that, you can build one and film it and sell them the DVD on all the ins and outs of how to keep raccoons out of their stuff for $19.99. They'll buy it really quick. They'll pay you for your time coming out there and doing that. You leave with money and you've got a happy customer. That's where I see this stuff coming from. That's where I think trappers eventually may get to. A raccoon is such a big problem. Eventually the landowner breaks down. Now they're going to pay you to catch the raccoon. But it's a process with these people to go to the point of killing. And a lot of people that I've talked to at the beginning, they have a problem. They go do research. They get crappy information. They take the energy to do it. They still get killing. They try something else. They still get killing. And eventually I'm getting an email or a phone call. Please tell me how to kill this SOB because I've got one duck out of 50 left. Or I've got one chicken left. Or I have no chickens, but I want chickens. But as a trapper that doesn't just think about fur and thinks about business, dude, this is a massive, massive market. But you're going to have to treat it like a business because it's different than someone calling you, I got a raccoon in the attic. You're going to have to build up the social capital, which we've talked about before, and the reputation that you're the expert in this. Go to the local gardening clubs or the master gardening classes. You know, have talks to them about different ways they can keep that out. Your reputation will spread. You know, go down and talk to the ag extension officer. He doesn't want to deal with somebody that's got chickens in their backyards and a mink or raccoons killing them. He don't want to spend his time doing that. All he needs is a name to go call this guy. And then when, you know, they have a website built up, which is not expensive, guys, and don't be scared of the internet. It is not the devil and it won't hurt you. You get a decent website where you show that you're a caring person about wildlife and a caring person about people with these issues, and you make the personal comfortable with using you. I mean, this is not the type of website where you got 50 raccoons piled up in the back of the truck and you look like you've been living in the brush for 6 months. This is not the type of place for that picture. You're showing happy chickens and kids playing with chickens and ducks and sheep running around, stuff like that. It's not a I'm the best killer there is. It's I'm here to help you and I understand what I'm doing type thing. So that's going to be up to you. But this is the way this movement, if you want to call it that, is growing. Because regardless of what anybody says, if you look on TV now, you see where people don't want corn syrup. They want free range eggs. They're learning that the free range eggs they're buying at the store is a lie. So they're looking for local people. So people see niches to grow eggs. Now they got conflicts with animals. All you're doing is integrating into a larger market that really needs your expertise because you're really the only one that knows anything. Now we're going to get into the third part of this show, is why you need to do something like this. And you may not like what I'm getting ready to say. And if you don't take heed to this and do your own research on this, don't just listen to me. I'm not, you know, some type of genius when it comes to all this. But what I do a lot of times with a lot of stuff that I listen to and the education I give myself is I look for patterns and I look for the reality of stuff and not the marketing of stuff. In the reality right now, with people's incomes, is pretty precarious and they don't even know it. And this is why having something like, because if the economy starts going south again, people start growing more of their own food and raising more own chickens and trying to do stuff like that, which means your business is going to flourish during that time. So all this plays in together. I don't know if y'all have noticed this, and I'm going to talk about a few patterns and a few logical ways to look at things, is why you need a localized, specialized craftsmanship, cottage style business of some kind that you can do where you're not relying on somebody else to give you a paycheck. And you don't have to quit your job now to do one of these, because that would be foolish for a lot of people to do. You build up this other business. You suck up the free time to build this business, then you later on you'll make a decision whether to go full time or not. But what you're trying to do is just have a backup income stream, just like I'm doing with the nursery stock that I'm building up for myself. It's a different income stream in a totally different industry with a totally different clientele that just makes my life more stable when it comes to income. And that's what I really believe everybody needs to do. I want everybody to do a little exercise that listens to this. Watch Fox Business. Spend 2 hours over the next 2 weeks. I don't care what show it is. I don't care who the host is, and I don't care what the topic is. Just watch it. 10 minutes here, 10 minutes there. Watch it for a couple hours over a couple of weeks. And look for patterns inside of that. I watch that for patterns. I know they're lying. Fox is lying, CNN's lying, politicians are lying. I know they're lying. And I'm getting to tell you why I know they're lying. But you need to know that they're lying so you can protect yourself. And this is not conspiracy or someone's out to get you or whatever. It's just dysfunction. We live in a country of dysfunction. And you can see it everywhere on the news and when you talk to people. So it shouldn't be that big of a stretch. So it's dysfunctional. It's trying to survive. And if you watch business Fox News, or I don't care if there's a CNN business news or whatever it is you want to watch, it doesn't really matter. They're all going to say the same thing, is our growth is slowing down. Now, we need more growth. We need more growth. We need more growth. How's this company going to get more growth? Yada, yada, yada. But while they're saying that, the stock market is the highest it's been in years. Now, these people are intelligent enough to know why the stock market's that high, but they're not telling you, even though they're business money shows. And I'm going to tell you why the stock market's high. And if you got a lot of money in the stock markets and pensions and 401ks, and this doesn't scare the crap out of you, I don't think you've got a pulse, really. I don't do 401ks. I don't do the stock market. I don't do anything else. I do a personal small business where I have control over it, and I can make way more money on my time and money than I can giving it to strangers and outsource my future to people that don't care anything about me, which is what the stock market is, if you hadn't figured that out. The only way the stock market works is if there's growth. Now, guys, I want you to logically think about something. A guinea pig is about a pound and a half animal. A guinea pig started off at less than an ounce. It doubles its body weight for about 4 weeks. Then it really slows down. Then after about 6 months, it really doesn't get any bigger. Now, what happens, not thinking about money or stock market, what happens to that guinea pig if it has to continuously grow? Well, if you do the math on this, and I actually watched a thing on YouTube explaining this, which I thought was pretty ingenious. If the guinea pig continuously doubled its body weight the way that it does the first couple of weeks of its life, by year two, it would be over 1 billion pounds. Now, since that thing eats vegetation, there wouldn't be one bit of vegetation left on the earth from one guinea pig with continuous growth. Now, our economy, the way it's set up right now, is all on continuous growth. Now, no one would believe that it would be a healthy thing for you and me or the world or anything else if guinea pigs weighed 1 billion pounds. But somehow we're told over and over and over again in our personal life, in our investing life, in our business life and everything, we got to strive for more growth. The reason the stock market needs to strive for more growth, because if it's not showing growth, people don't put their money there. So they've got to show growth in that. Now, if you look at our GDP, which is not correct from the simple fact GDP doesn't look at if something is positive or negative, it just looks at money. Like when Sandy went through the Northeast and destroyed all those places, our GDP went up. Now, the real world didn't get any better. They just replaced what was there. But even with these massive disasters, they could only get the GDP to go up in points of a percent. And what they're also not telling you is the Federal Reserve is printing $40 billion. That's with a B, guys. $40 billion. It's like $400 million a month. And they're giving it to the stock market people through banks. And basically free. Now, what is the stock market doing with this money? And if you think the stock market is legit and you have investments, here's a little experiment for you to do. You will see that all these companies are buying their own stock back. When they're buying their stock back, that makes their stock prices go higher. And it's really simple. If Predator Control Group had 100 shares and we had $100 profit, that means everybody gets a dollar. If Predator Control Group has 100 shares and there's 50 people with one stock, that means everybody gets $2. You can see how we can work that down to where that $100 can mean a lot to a few people than it can a lot of people. But if someone on the outside was looking at Predator Control Group stock and they could make $4 on their dollar, because there's not a lot of stock on the market, they would invest in Predator Control Group. Now, what if Predator Control Group is not really making any more money than it did for the last 10 years? It's stagnant or it's going backwards. I've got 100 stocks out there. I've got basically free money being given to me by the Federal Reserve. So I'm going to buy my stocks back. I've got 100 out there now. I'm going to buy back 50% of them. On the stock market, if Predator Control Group was on the stock market, that now means that there's a 50% increase in the stock market value of Predator Control Group. It is completely irrelevant to the stock market if I'm actually losing money and about to go bankrupt. Or that the money that I just borrowed, I'm going to have to pay back, but my profits are so low in reality, it's going to take me 10 years of basically no profits, but I got your money into the stock market anyway. And me as Predator Control Group knows that my business really sucks, but I can manipulate the stock market to get free money to come to me from investors because they see a 50% growth. That then when it's all said and done and I know I'm about to go tits up, I can short Predator Control Group, take all that money out of Predator Control Group legally, and go do something else with it. That's the stock market the way it is now. Even with the $40 billion that's going into the stock market, they cannot even get a 1% raise on that money in the stock market. Because there's no growth. Because eventually, just like the guinea pig, something can't grow forever. The world markets can't grow forever. China right now is in a big mess because they tried to force growth to keep money coming into their stock market. It's so bad in the last 3 or 4 days, they've had to shut their market down because everybody's taking their money out. If that happens, China, the government, the businesses, the banks, everybody's going to go tits up if that continues. So they just stopped it. You can't trade in it. They tried to force growth, just like America is trying to force growth with $40 billion a month. But the stock market's the highest it's ever been. And people are falling for this again. And in case you don't know this, look back every single decade that at least that I've been adult and understood what the stock market was, and watch what happens. People lose 40 to 50% of their money every decade. When I was building swimming pools, I'll start before that. Black Friday in 1987 crashed the fur industry and people went bankrupt and foreclosures on house and everything like that. In the 90s, when I was building swimming pools, Bill Clinton was in, the economy was rocking and rolling, and then the e-bubble and all that crashed. People lost over half of their money and all those investments, and 401ks got all screwed up. And then you got the housing bubble, and you got what's going to get ready to happen with the correction. So probably within, 6 months to a couple of years, this stock market's going to take half your money too. And the lie that they tell you is, well, if the stock market was at 1,300 and you drop down to 600, or let's make this even, 1,200 to 600 in points, and it goes back to 1,200, you got your money back. And it didn't really matter because you're back to where you were. Guys, that is a lie. 100% lie. They are bleeding you. And they're bleeding the whole economy. But they're at a point where there's not a lot they can do about it. Just put that in basic math that people understand. If you've got a $10 stock and you lose 50% of it, the stock's worth 50%. If you gain back that 50%, your stock's worth $720, $750. So where's the other $250 at? It's sitting in the hands of the people that shorted the market. So all that money you see on the stock market basically gets put in the hands of not that many people every decade. So you're losing money that way. And the correction is getting ready to happen again. Except I think it's going to be a lot bigger this time, because as in all of these bubbles throughout the last 40 or 50 years have done, they've expanded in size to try to correct and force growth that they can't force, because there's a point where growth just is not going to happen at 4-6%. Because at 7%, if you look at formulas, 7% growth on anything means it doubles its size in 5 to 6 years. That means our economy, for us to keep this percentage, would have to double every decade, and it's not possible. There's no way to do that. The reason that I push the small business, if you go out and you consult someone on how to keep their chickens alive, you can take the $4 in gas that you spent and the couple hundred dollars on a website and learn how to do SEO by buying books and stuff like that. You could turn that into $300 in a day. You're not going to do it every day, but you'll have definitely days you do it. You can go trap for somebody, but that money's continually grow, and at the percentage that the stock market is doing, even with its fixed the way that it is now, it can't compare to a local, small, low-income, debt-free business can do, even if it's not doing very well. The stock market can't compete with that. And what I want you to do when you watch Fox News Business for a couple of weeks, you will see that Coca-Cola is buying their stock back. GE is buying their stock back. One of the most obvious ones right now is Wendy's. And these people will tell you to buy Wendy's stock because it's going up in value. Wendy's makes less money today than it did 5 years ago, but their stock's up 30%. Now, logically explain to yourself how that works. They bought back their stocks with free money from the Federal Reserve. Now, is Wendy's a good investment? Because they're losing ground in the market and they're losing ground in the profit. But the stock market will tell you that it's a valued stock because it's up 30% over the last couple of years. And if you happen to get in it and get out of it and you can take that money, which you can't do in a 401k or a Roth or a pension because you're stuck in it, then you may be able to play the market a little bit. But for most people, that's not really an option. They're not day traders, per se, like that. So you have all of these major corporations. If you look at their profit loss, their profit net income, their percentage of profit. If you have stocks in there, you can look this information up. You can look it up online because they're publicly traded companies. IBM has been losing money for the last 15 years, but their stock is a lot higher now than it was 10 years ago. How is that possible? The pattern, the same thing with the bubble in 2008 and the bubble that happened with the internet bubble in 87. So you see these every decade, they're taking your money. The value of the stock market goes higher than the value of the companies that people are investing in. And then when something happens every single time where people realize that that value is not real and they pull that money out. Now, if your money is in there, and especially in some type of pension or 401k, all you can do is take the hit. Not only do you lose that money, up to that date of that year, you're going to have to pay taxes on the income that was in there, even though you physically never had your hands on it or could have spent it. So not only do you lose the money because the stock market dropped because it's false, it's a scam. As long as they can keep money going in there, it works. And if money slows down, it falls apart. You're going to lose that. Plus, you're going to have taxes on the income that you never could use. So it's not even really 50%. It's 50% plus the whatever your tax bracket is. And people wonder why there can't be growth. Because these companies are trying to strive for this growth. And they can't do it because the growth is pretty much hit. You know, I mean, how much money are we going to get from third world countries? People's incomes are not raising in the country that have jobs, pretty much. So where is this growth going to come from? That's the question you need to be asking instead of listening to the same strategy. You put it in there for 40 years and miraculously you're rich and you go live in Florida somewhere. That's not happening. That's not happening. There's $3 trillion right now, that's with a T, trillion, in college student loans. And college students, whether you believe they're correct or not, are starting to figure out that they were scammed in college and they paid too much for an undervalued product, which was a college education that does not give them the jobs that they thought they would get, were promised, and were lied about. And they're going to start reneging on those loans. $3 trillion. That's like the economy of Russia. And as soon as they're already doing it now, as that becomes more common for people just to give the government the middle finger and the colleges a middle finger and the bank a middle finger, because their whole lives, they were marketed that they had to spend $100,000 or $60,000 on an education, and now they work at Walmart. They're not going to pay that loan. Now, what do you think that's going to do with the stock market? It's going to cause it to correct itself $3 trillion. And that's just one thing. Now, when that money slows down, that means the companies that are bringing in all this free money to artificially jump up their stock price is going to start having really big issues too. So it gets corrected and corrected and corrected. But if you have a small business as a trapper where it's local and you're dealing with people in your area and you're not in debt, that is how you're more stable as a trapper. You have a more stable family. You don't have to go into panic mode and watch all your money disappear, something else. Because if you're getting, even if you're getting 10% on your money in the stock market right now, and you do your own research and you find out what I just told you is absolutely correct, 10% of that money means you're going to risk, say, $10,000 to earn $1,000. Well, a small business owner that's got a decent business that is based off giving value to a customer, that $10,000, even if you make a product that you sell to other trappers, or you sell whatever to someone that needs something for a chicken coop or whatever it is, that $10,000 on an average of what a company's going to make off that product is probably going to be double. Now, that person that uses their head in their own business can do their own market research. They can control their costs. They can control their advertisements. They can control everything about their business for the most part. Or they can go for a smaller return in the stock market where strangers are in an industry where it's built on finding ways to take advantage of other people. Now, ethically, I just think that's a bad business model. Some people will disagree with that. I'm not going to go there right now. But the way that you can short stock, if you don't think all these experts out there know that it's going to be a correction, if you could see their own portfolios, you'll see they're shorting stuff. But that's why it is so important, and the reason I harp on probably once a month on why you need to start your own business. And it doesn't have to be in trapping. It could just be a way to make your life more stable. But you've got to see the patterns around you. People are coming into small homesteading. There's a huge niche market there. That's a pattern. All the major Fortune 500 companies are buying their own stock back. That's a pattern. Them trying to do anything they can for potential growth to keep the party going a little bit longer before they have to correct it is a pattern. You can see that pattern for the last four decades. And just like with coyotes or coon, a trapper that understands the patterns of those animals can do something to help himself within those patterns. Catch more fur. Not lose his money in the stock market. Build a business that is low infrastructure and cost. And whatever you do, guys, don't think about business in the terms of Walmart or GE or the dollar store or Cabela's. Forget that. Forget it. You don't even want to go there. What most Americans, at least in my opinion, should be striving for is to build a business that you can generate what you need to live off of out of that business. And then you can make a decision to do a second business, which is not tied to that business, to repeat that process and keep it in the same money where you're not having to go in debt up to your eyeballs. So if there is a stock market correction, you're not out of business. If the fur market totally crashes, I'm not out of business because I don't owe anybody anything. My lure is just going to get better on the shelf. When it comes back around, I start selling more of it. If the stock market crashes, it's not going to make any difference if somebody wants to plant pawpaw trees because it gives them fruit. Or mulberries because it's a free food source for their chickens. It's just a one-time cost. That's not going to really affect that. Not on my size scale anyway. Now, if I was, you know, a multi-billion dollar company like you get your trees and plants from Walmart, that's a different story. But on a small scale with low cost, you can ride storms out, be okay, and then as soon as it starts turning around, you're back into making money again. That's safer. And the reason I'm talking about the stock market, and I know this is a trapping radio show and stuff like that, trapping and a trapper and his income and his livelihood and his happiness and his mental stability, all that goes together, guys. Every bit of that goes together. They're not separated. I could go into a long rant about departmentalizing the way that Americans think and why it's all screwed up. It's a whole system. A trapper is a whole system. His family, his house, his fur, the fur market, his income, everything. It's a whole system. It's not just one. And you don't need to separate those two out or you're going to get in trouble somewhere down the road. Because if you don't think of your life as a whole system, you let other stuff that's not important become too important, and stuff that's really important not mean that much. And the whole system gets out of whack. So that's the reason that I'm going into this, and that's the reason I'm probably going to continue to talk about it going down the road, just because I want trappers, come hell or high water, no matter what's going on in the country, I want trappers to be financially stable and happy and be able to adjust to whatever's coming. And what I just told you about the stock market, if you do enough digging, you'll find it yourself. It's not even hidden. It's just as most people outsource their money. They outsource their kids' education. They outsource their kids' raising. They outsource their food. They outsource their insurance. We as Americans outsource everything to strangers, and then we get upset when the stranger does not have our best interest in mind. Well, if you're going to be a smart human being, you got to start insourcing a lot of your own stuff so you can, because you're the only one that's going to care about you. And that's totally up to you to do that. You can't especially outsourcing your money, that's crazy. You don't even know, if you got money to start, you don't even know where it's at. It's not even real money anymore. It's on a computer screen. You can't go get it if you wanted to. If you got stock in IBM, go get money from IBM. See how that works out for you. I mean, it doesn't even make sense if you look at it without the greedy part and without the marketing that you're hammered with from growing up about how you should invest in retirement and stuff like that. Here's a better idea, guys. You want to have a happy life? Design your life where retirement is irrelevant. Retirement for me from trapping? Why would I retire from trapping? Why would I retire from growing plants that I like to plant now within permaculture? If I'm breathing, I'm going to be doing that. So let's design our lives where we don't need to worry about retirement. And if you're doing what you want to do and you can generate money from it, the idea of giving all your money to a stranger is not that important anymore. Just a thought. Weird way to end a trapping show, I know. But think about the other stuff that I said ahead of time about the coyotes and the business opportunities. Guys are everywhere out there. Everywhere out there. And all you got to do is just pay attention. And look for the patterns that are there in front of you and not in the general acceptance of what is true and false. Because most of the time, if everybody's doing it, you need to stay away from it. Because if everybody's doing it, it's time to get out of it. Which is pretty much like the stock market. But I'll leave that up to you. And if you're in the stock market and you're neck deep into 401ks and pensions and all that, I hope for your sake that I'm wrong. But if you do your own research, you'll start seeing there's way better ways for you to take control of your finances and not a stranger. Well, next week we've got a interview with a gentleman from Minnesota that I think everybody's going to highly enjoy. It was a great interview, a lot of good information from a guy that's, you know, he's been trapping for a long time. He's very knowledgeable, and I was really glad to meet him up there. So next week, you won't be hearing so much from me. You'll be hearing from somebody else, and I hope everybody has a good week. And don't forget that the NTA is going to be up in New York. I think that's going to be a pretty good show. And if you're going to be up there, come by and shake my hand. If I've never met you, I'd like to meet you. All right, this is Clint signing out.